Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us together tonight to hear from your word and enjoy each other's company and to learn about the things that will transpire. Lord, let the information that I have be, your word, your will, and not my thoughts. All this in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, so we have gone through the entire timeline. According to the Bible, we've gone through pretty much the entire book of Revelation, adding in all the other prophecies through the Old Testament and things like that. So at this point, we've really completed the body of the paper that I wrote on this, and now we're into the conclusions. So this section will be basically on what I believe, or why I believe, that this is the last generation and the state of the world and the state of Israel, that all points to this being the last generation. So while it's impossible to determine the exact timing of the rapture, it might be possible to determine the timing of the second coming of Christ, and then basically then in kind of an upper boundary for that. And, Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5, "For you yourselves know very well the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night. When they say peace and security, then sudden destruction comes on them, like labor pains come on a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape." But Paul also confirmed that believers are going to know the season in which Christ's return would occur, because also in 1 Thessalonians 4, immediately following that previous quote, "But you, brothers, are not in the dark for this day to overtake you like a thief." So there are signs of this general coming, and we're to be aware of them and be watchful for them. So we really need to first determine what those signs of Christ's return are. And one of the major areas for this is the rebirth of Israel. And a lot of that is pointed to, we talked about this earlier, the Valley of the Dry Bones prophecy in Ezekiel 37, and that describes the rebirth of Israel in great length. Some of the highlights of that: the nation of Israel will be brought back into existence in a single day. So from Isaiah 66, 7 and 8, "Before Zion was in labor, she gave birth. Before she was in pain, she delivered a boy. Who has heard of such a thing? Who has seen such things? Can a land be born in one day, or a nation be delivered in an instant? Yet as soon as Zion was in labor, she gave birth to her sons." And then Israel is also going to be a single unified nation with Judah. In Ezekiel 37:22, "I will make them one nation in the land, on the mountains of Israel, and one king will rule over all of them. They will no longer be two nations and will no longer be divided into two kingdoms." So some of this, of course, has already been fulfilled. In 1917, the Balfour Declaration announced British support for the establishment of the national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. And so that corresponds to the very beginning of Ezekiel 37 and verses 4-8. "Then he said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I'll make breath enter you and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord. So I prophesied and I was commanded. And as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared on them like skin, and skin covered them, and there was no breath in them." So that's the beginning of the birth of Israel, as the the Jews started to come back into the land and start to reconstitute that nation. Then on May 14th, 1948, the Jewish Agency Chairman David Ben-Gurion declared Israel to be a nation, and the United States recognized Israel on that same day. And the State of Israel officially became, came into being upon termination of the British mandate in Palestine. So again, going back to Ezekiel 37, in verses 15 to 17 and 20 to 22, then the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, take a stick of wood and write on it, belonging to Judah and the Israelites associated with him. Then take another stick of wood and write on it, belonging to Joseph, that is to Ephraim, and all the Israelites associated with him. Join them together into one stick so that they will become one in your hand. Hold therefore their eyes to the sticks you have written on and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will take the Israelites out of the nations where they have gone. I'll gather them from all around and bring them back to their own land. I'll make them one nation in one land on the mountain of Israel. There'll be one king over all of them, and they will never again be two nations or divided into two kingdoms. Isaiah 66, 8 also says, well, we already talked about that one, being born in one day.
John.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You see these dates in 17 and 48.
Yep.
What occurred previously?
Prior to 1917?
What was going on then? What was the end of?
That was the end of World War One.
Right.
Yeah.
And then here in 48, it was just briefly after the end of World War II.
Right.
So there was a great disruption in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep.
It seemed to be right for Israel to become more recognized. Then also, before the Great Tribulation, there's going to be another war.
Yep.
Yeah, so it seems like the Lord works, his will.
Through these wars, yeah.
With these wars, yeah.
Yeah, because the Holocaust, I think that was what really allowed people to say Israel needs, the Jews need their own nation for their own security.
Yeah.
I just thought
there was an interesting correlation.
Yep.
Ben-Gurion was actually fought. He was a general, I believe, right?
Yes.
He was a leader before he became the big hunter.
Yep.
Of course, the Balfour Declaration, give the Palestinians a home too. We're still there.
Yeah, but it was the start. That was the thing.
Yeah.
That was the first time that anyone suggested in, 2,000 years,
right,
the Jews need their own land.
You know, the British, they were instrumental with the Balfour. They had to be kicked out.
Yeah.
With, in 1948, because obviously they had such influence that their influence had to be, taken away for
right.
Israel to truly become a nation in 48.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the amazing thing, see God working, because on that day, yet all those Arab nations who said, now is our chance, we're going to wipe them out. And they couldn't do it. Yeah. They had no planes, no guns, no nothing, and they still held them off.
Israel had
nothing.
They had nothing.
It's amazing.
And it's the same with the Six Days War in 67, too.
Absolutely.
Which is the next thing. Yeah. So with the Six Days War, Israel then got the Golan Heights returned to them, solidifying that prophecy of one nation for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel 36, in that part of the prophecy, son of man, prophesy to the mountains of Israel and say, mountains of Israel, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. The enemy said of you, aha, the ancient heights have become our possession. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I swear with uplifted hand that the nations around you will suffer scorn, but you, mountains of Israel, will produce branches and fruit for my people Israel, for they will soon come home. I am concerned for you and will look on you with favor. You will be plowed and sown, and I will cause many people to live on you. Yes, all of Israel. The towns will be inhabited and the ruins rebuilt. I will increase the number of people and animals living on you, and they will be fruitful and become numerous. I will settle people on you as in the past and will make you prosper more than before. Then you will know that I am the Lord. I will cause people, my people Israel, to live on you. They will possess you, and they will be, you will be their inheritance. You will never again deprive them of their children. And so one of the things that you can also take from this is that with all of the peace deals, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later on too, but all the peace deals, they're all doomed to failure if you're going to try and divide Israel up again, because this prophecy says that once they have these heights, Israel has it forever. It's always going to be theirs.
Now, how do you know it's the Golan Heights? When you talk about the heights, right?
Yeah, that's most of the people doing commentary on this, you know, equate the Golan Heights with the heights in this section.
Because, I mean, even the mountains, you know, the mountain running through,
yeah,
they're now populating, you know, they're making settlements and living there. And because I don't know how many people actually live on the Golan Heights, but there's certainly a lot of settlements in the rest of the mountains.
So. Yeah, all of Israel is starting to flourish, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have some beautiful parks and, you know, we're looking from the Golan Heights. They've got to remember going up in the, David Saul, who was a tank commander. They had a guy speaking. It was a really nice park area that you look out over. And he was explaining, you know, some of what happened, let's say in the 67 war and things like that. So they've really beautified the area quite a bit, and they have a lot of memorials there and things like that.
One of the next major events was also in 2017 with Jerusalem being recognized as Israel's capital. That was another huge thing that the U.S. did. So what really remains then is for the breath to enter and for, you know, Israel to come to life and stand on their feet. And that's coming from Ezekiel 37, 9 and 10. And then he said to me, prophesy to the breath, prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Come breath from the four winds and breathe into these slain that they may live. So I prophesied as he commanded me. Breath entered them and they came to life, stood up on their feet, a vast army. And so basically what this one is saying is it's talking about the spiritual awakening, which I believe is going to be in the aftermath of the Arab-Israeli war.
The second one, right?
First one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to reiterate a little bit about when the rapture occurs concerning this and then the next big war?
So the rapture can occur either before or after that Arab-Israeli war, but certainly it will be before the Gog and Magog war, because the spiritual awakening has to occur. And for that to happen, some of the prophecies say that the church age has to end for that spiritual awakening to occur.
So if we see things ratcheting up for an Arab-Israeli war, then we see obviously prophecy being fulfilled, but we should become more alert.
Yeah.
And we should be alert now, but more alert to the probability of the rapture occurring fairly soon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll be the same combatants that they fought in the late 40s, all the surrounding nations.
Yes. So, yeah. Yep. And in the 67 war too, because I think that had most of the combatants as well for the 6 days war, if I remember correctly.
Okay, I remember Egypt being the big one, but they did fight other ones too.
Yeah, I think Syria and Jordan were part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we don't talk much about Iran.
That's part of Gog.
That's Gog and Magog. Yeah. Turkey and Iran. Yeah.
Farther away, but they're
The ones outside of that ring.
They're in the outer ring. Yeah.
They're more Persia and those.
Yep.
Yeah.
So one of the other signs is it's going to be that the land is going to get restored. Mm-hmm. Israel is going to have a thriving agriculture from Isaiah 27, 6. In the days to come, Jacob will take root. Israel will blossom and bloom and fill the whole world with fruit. Isaiah 35, 1, the wilderness and the dry land will be glad, and the desert will rejoice and blossom like a rose. The Dead Sea is going to come to life. Ezekiel 47, 9 and 10, every kind of living creature that swarms will live wherever the river flows, and there will be a huge number of fish because the water goes there. Since the water will become fresh, there will be life everywhere the river goes. Fishermen will stand beside it from En Gedi to En Eglim. These will become places where nets are spread out to dry. Their fish will consist of many different kinds, like the fish of the Mediterranean Sea. Wow. So, I mean, just to bring that into perspective now, I mean, you know, doing some of the research that I did, scientists have been shocked and to discover that the sinkholes appearing around the Dead Sea are quickly filling up with fish and other forms of life previously unseen in that region. Israel's tourist industry also touts the country's success in shrinking the Negev Desert over the last century, which currently covers 60% of the country through the use of modern agriculture. It has turned the desert into green fields that produce a variety of crops, including cherry, tomatoes. And the tomatoes, they say, are like 2 to 3 times sweeter than those produced anywhere else because of the unique growing conditions. And it's also become home to fish farms and olive groves. And Israel is also one of the world's leading citrus producers.
So now, when you say the Negev, you mean really far south.
Yeah.
I thought that was just totally barren.
That's a desert. Well, some of them, when you drive, it's barren. It's barren. Even En Gedi, where David was, there's still some life there.
But it's starting to come back. That's the thing. They're, with the agriculture, they're starting to reclaim that all.
Yeah, you can see that tribe. I mean, Israel is becoming very productive. You can you drive. I mean, they've got olive tree after all. I mean, it's just incredible when you look at how much they've worked the land and the agricultures. Mm-hmm. You can tell over the last several decades, it's just blossomed.
Yep.
Yeah, but then Negev, I didn't know down further south. And what I did, I read these and I did Google Negev, pictures of Negev. And you might find that interesting, but then they show you just what's happening along there. Mm-hmm. Green, you got all this desert, and all of a sudden there's all this green, that kind of thing. So it'd be interesting to Google that to get an idea of what's going on over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have all these big desalination areas near the water where they're taking the salt out so they can use the water for other things.
Mm-hmm. One of the next prophecies on Israel is that Jerusalem will be the center of world conflict. Nah, that doesn't happen. So Zechariah 12, 2-3, look, I will make Jerusalem a cup that causes staggering for the peoples who surround the city. The siege against Jerusalem will also involve Judah. On that day, I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who try to lift it will injure themselves severely when all the nations of the earth gather against her. So, I mean, as we've seen, you know, every president, U.S. president since Jimmy Carter, and possibly even before, has attempted to broker peace treaties between Israel and her neighbors. And they've had varying levels of success. But, you know, as I said before, one of the reasons that the plans have failed has become because they've always, required Israel to give up land for peace. And that's doomed because the Bible states God gave Israel the promised land and it's always going to remain her possession. And that goes back again to Ezekiel 36, 12. As I mentioned earlier, that it's going to be your inheritance and you will no longer deprive them of their children. The next is that the IDF is going to be a great army, the Israeli Defense Force. Ezekiel 37, 10, so I prophesied as he commanded me, the breath entered them and they came to life and stood on their feet, a vast army. Zechariah 12, 6 and 8. And on that day, I will make the leaders of Judah like a fire pot in a wood pile, like a flaming torch among sheaves. They'll consume all the peoples around them on the right and on the left, while Jerusalem continues to be inhabited on its site in Jerusalem. On that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that on that day, the one who is weakest among them will be like David. And on that day, the house of David will be like God, and the angel of the Lord will be before them. Israel has had to rely on the military to ensure their survival. Despite being a small country and surrounded by larger enemies, Israel's fought numerous wars against superior forces and won every single one of them. And that goes from the 48 War for Independence, the Six-Day War in 1967, the 1973 Yom Kippur War, the Lebanon Wars in 1986 and 2006, the 2008 Gaza War, and then the numerous other smaller conflicts. Recent events also indicate that the time horizon is going to be short for the remaining prophetic events to occur. One of the first things is that the U.S. influence in the Middle East may get eliminated. The rapture, of course, could certainly reduce or eliminate our influence in the region. Also, God may raise up a U.S. president not supportive of Israel. I mean, that's, it's still a distinct possibility, unfortunately.
Well, Obama wasn't supportive, so it's already happened.
Yeah.
And John Kerry's going to be a part of
Yeah.
You know, he certainly wasn't, he's the one that was a part of the Iran deal.
Yep.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I just heard now that they're tapping Mayor Pete to be the envoy to China. Mm-hmm. Pete Buttigieg. Yeah.
To China.
To China.
Okay.
Yeah. There also appears to be increased interest by Russia to exert control over the oil fields in the region. So going back to Ezekiel 38, 11 and 12, seizing spoil and plunder is a major factor in the Russian involvement in the Gog and Magog war. You will say, I will go up against the land of open villages. I will come against the tranquil people who are living securely, all of them living without walls and without bars or gates, in order to seize spoil and carry off plunder, to turn your hand against the ruins now inhabited and against people gathered from the nations who have been acquiring cattle and possessions and who live at the center of the world. Yeah, so many of the prophetic events are now starting to be seen. Israel and the UAE just recently signed a peace agreement normalizing relations between the countries. This is the third country to sign such a deal after Egypt and Jordan, with Jordan being the last one that signed in 1994. And then Trump has also hinted at additional Arab states that may soon sign. You know, if Biden takes over, I have a feeling that's going to all get squelched. But I mean, there's potential for additional ones to sign up to this. And unfortunately, this is causing further instability with Turkey because they're backing the Palestinians. And they believe that these peace agreements harm the Palestinian push for an independent state. So that instability could then lead to that Arab-Israeli war. So that takes care of everything surrounding Israel and Jerusalem in terms of what's coming prophetically and why it seems like now is the right time for these events to occur. Additionally to that, in the rest of the world, there's a number of signs regarding people and technology, the environment, governments that are leading up to Christ's return. The general disregard for the unborn life, recent rioting and looting and gaslighting of history by groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa. It's really hard if not impossible, to deny that the state of people matched the prophetic last generation. For example, Paul's second letter to Timothy provides a scathing description of the attitudes of the people during during this time. Bless you.
Thank you.
2 Timothy 3:1-7. But know this, difficult times will come in the last days, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, without love for what is good, traitors, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to the form of godliness, but denying its power. Avoid these people, for among them are those who worm their way into households and capture idle women burdened down with sins, led along by a variety of passions, always learning and never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Okay. Damning description.
Graduation class.
It's clear that this, from this description, this generation is self-centered and wants nothing to do with God. Even though they profess faith, they are at best hypocrites, and at worst professing a false faith or occult practices. Though they may be well-educated, they have no understanding of the truth. You know, many false prophets will come to deceive the world. Matthew 24, back to the Olivet Discourse, verses 23 and 24. At the time, if anyone says to you, look here, there is the Messiah, or there he is, don't believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So many are going to deny the second coming of Christ. 2 Peter 3:3-4. Above all, you must understand that in the last days, scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own evil desires. They'll say, where is this coming he promised? Ever since our ancestors died, everything goes on as it has since the beginning of creation. We've been hearing of his coming for 2,000 years. But now I think the time is actually ripe for it. This is the first time that some of these prophecies are even able to be fulfilled. So
I think that's the key there. Obviously, books written and speculation that we all know just from what we see going on also with, and you'll get into this technology and everything. This seems to be one of the most ripest times just because of the events that are occurring.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From a U.S. perspective, the moral decline is going to have far-reaching effects. The impacts caused by the chaos created will affect both believers and non-believers. It's going to bring judgment to the country as a whole, removing the U.S. as a superpower. And this may be one reason why the U.S. is unwilling or unable to support Israel in the Gog and Magog war. Back to Ezekiel 38, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and all her villages will say to you, and that's representing England, Australia, and the U.S. as the merchants of Tarshish and all the villages. They have come. Have they come to plunder? Have you gathered your hordes to loot and to carry off silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, and to seize much plunder? It's impossible again to deny it. All this is currently seen. Yeah. So.
You think our moral decline is going to chaos, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so. Because that hedge of protection on the nation as a whole is going to get lifted. And I mean, I think we're starting to see that already with this past summer with Antifa and all the riots and things like that, and the stealing of the election this year, and things like that.
It seems to me, it almost sounds like if you read what Biden and Harris want to do, that sounds, depending on how far they go, that almost sounds like a tribulation. You know,
it's the beginning shades of it, yeah.
Yeah, it just sounds like everything we talked about, what they want to do.
I think it's going to get infinitely worse, though, when we really get into the tribulation. I mean, the Biden and Harris are going to be child's play. You know?
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're going to be child. In fact, you know, they're obviously Satan's instruments or his tools. That, I mean, they're just water in a lot of ways. But they're going to have influence. And that influence is what's going to obviously change the course of the nation. You know, that's where the power is, because that influence is going to be used, obviously, by Satan and those who want to bring us more and more into one world government.
Yeah, so
they're just merely pawns. That's why they had to get rid of Trump, because they couldn't influence him.
Right.
Because he was pro-United States, he was, you know, constitutionalist. He was everything they didn't want him to be, and he was an excellent president.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they did what they did with the election.
Yeah, and you're seeing now some of things coming out about just how deep China had their influence in many political leaders and why they had to make him go.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of super sensational in a way. It's just kind of shake your, you just kind of can't believe we're seeing these things happening.
Yeah.
You know, but we are. But it's just bizarre.
And you try and talk to some people about it, and it just goes over their head. You can't see this? And they don't.
No, they don't.
When they won't even listen to anything.
That
that's
too.
That's where I get is like a wall. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about any of it. Nothing.
I don't understand it, so I'm just going to ignore it. Yeah.
I don't understand. I can't get my head wrapped around the Pollyanna attitude of Christians. I'm not saying everybody has to be militant, but just not wanting to face facts, hear truth, just try to live in a bubble. It doesn't make sense.
I guess maybe it's because, I don't know, there's a lot of churches that just avoid this teaching so that...
Well, there are most, I would say a lot. I'm not going to say... Maybe even most, I don't know. That
mm-hmm.
You see, it's I don't know, it's a mentality I don't quite understand, because they don't want to obviously rock the boat, or, you know, life's so hard, you know, or we've got to really be optimistic and Pollyannish, like you're saying, whatever it is, you know, because we're here to, you know, just bring spiritual health to those, and we're just going to make sure we keep it light.
Mm-hmm. They don't want to offend anybody because they need the numbers in order to survive financially.
Problem is, it's going to all come crashing down.
Yeah.
And so these churches aren't doing a lot of believers any favors at all. Because how are you going to stand or know how to stand unless you have the foundation of the word, plus being surrounded by strong believers who are going to be there to help support one another, encourage one another as we see the day approaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The next set of signs for the last generation, you know, this is the first time that technology is there that's necessary to fulfill certain prophecies. This is the first generation to have nuclear weapons, which would allow mankind to destroy the world. Yeah, so Revelation 8:7, the first angel sounded his trumpet, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was hurled down on the earth. A third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. I mean, so this, you know, I mean, this sounds like a nuclear exchange. Yeah. So, I mean, this is the first generation that can possibly do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Computers are powerful enough now to track all financial transactions. Radio frequency identification can be used to create the mark of the beast that controls the ability to buy and sell a global cashless economy. Again, going back to Revelation 13, 16, and 17. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive the mark on the right hand or on their foreheads so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. The global internet, as well as cable and satellite news, will allow everyone to see the two witnesses martyred, resurrected, and raptured live. Revelation 11, 9, for 3.5 days, some from every people, tribe, language, and nation will gaze on their bodies and refuse them burial. You know, the rapture is going to be visible for all to see, similar to when Christ ascended to heaven from the Mount of Olives. You know, that's the two witnesses. As they rise up, it's not going to be an instantaneous rapture. They're going to be seen rising up to heaven.
So why won't they shut the internet down?
I have a feeling they're going to be everyone just so awestruck that they're not going to realize what they're seeing until it's too late and it's already being shown. Or you're going to have like people on YouTube, you're throwing things up all the time and you're not going to be able to completely bury it. Out, yeah.
Won't you love to know what their explanation is going to be?
Aliens? Could be.
Yeah, but not to our families. I mean, our families will understand what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be a lot when the rapture occurs that we're going to come to Christ because they've heard it. And now
I was thinking about this the other day. Since the dead will rise first, are we going to watch them go up first? I was thinking about that. You know, we'll be sitting there and, you know, so, and then you're like,
we'll hear see the trumpet call those first. So we're going to hear that supernaturally. So we know that the dead are. I think we're going to have an understanding of that. And maybe it'll be so instantaneous that we're just right there with them.
Yeah.
You know, just following them up. It's not like, all right, when my turn is? You know? When are they going to release my table so I can go get food?
Calling number 500. And
you'd be sitting in the backyard and be watching all these people. Daisy, can't take her with me.
Sorry, Fred, you're number 2 billion.
One of the other things is that the gospel is going to get spread throughout the world in every language through online and electronic versions of the Bible, as well as through global broadcasts of Christian programs via the internet. Revelation 14, 6. Then I saw another angel flying in midair, and he had the eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. This will be an ever increasing method for spreading the gospel as the world gets closer to the tribulation period. Significant events such as the resurrection of Christ led people to seek information about prophecy. And you can see that I listed a number of times in Acts where that was referenced, and you can look those up. So similarly, when this rapture occurs, that's going to provide another significant opportunity to spread the gospel. And the best way that that's going to happen is through information that's left behind and through the internet. You know, while many people may read the gospel and come to know Christ as their savior, many more are still going to be deceived and turn away from Christ. Because of this generation's reliance on technology, they'll put their faith more in science rather than Christ. They're doing that now. Yeah. Demons potentially posing as extraterrestrials will further promote this belief. You're seeing this already with reports in, you know, today's mainstream news about the idea of extraterrestrials existing, and including the declassification of US UFO sightings and things like that by the military.
What'd you tell them about the Mars?
Oh yeah, there was an article today, I think it was from the Jerusalem Post, if I remember right, that a major person in the Israeli intelligence came out and said that the US and Israel has been in contact with extraterrestrials for years now, and that there's a joint US alien base on Mars, and that's the reason that Trump started the Space Force. So, I mean, they're already starting these lines of, you know, to condition you.
By what proof or evidence do they have of that?
Well, of course, it's all classified, you see. So, you know.
That's what every idiot on the internet says. A lot of people are stupid, I guess.
The next area, you know, there's going to be major environmental changes, such as famines and earthquakes. Signs of the birth pains, as described by Jesus in the Olivet Discourse, are clearly visible. From Matthew 24:7, the nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines, earthquakes in various places. Data from the U.S. National Centers for Environmental Information shows that earthquakes are on the rise. You can see from the graph here, these are significant earthquakes of magnitude 5 and greater. And you can see that trend, you know, from 1935 to today, just as a steady rise.
Yeah, there's a global warming.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Is this the Richter scale or the Mercalli scale that this graph is based off?
Richter.
Okay.
You go out to Yellowstone, you see what's going on there, it scares you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The thing is just bubbling. Ugh.
Yeah, when that one goes, ooh, it's going to be, yeah.
Super volcano.
And it's going to go.
And it's going to go.
Wow.
Another prime example of the birth pains is 2020, COVID. Fear of this virus is causing people to panic and hoard supplies, as well as causing, you know, markets to tumble, at least, you know, early on, you know, the markets, you know, took a huge nosedive. I'm actually surprised that the markets recovered as much as they did this year. I really wasn't expecting that.
I just bought more toilet paper today.
You're the one coming in my heart, huh?
One of the final signs is going for this generation is going to be the establishment of the one world government, with the moral decline causing countries such as the US to lose influence in the world. The Antichrist is going to be able to fill this power void by establishing that worldwide government. You know, you've seen this in Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Revelation 13, and Revelation 17, talking about that one world government. You know, many people wonder how the Antichrist is going to establish this government and persuade, you know, Israel to sign the peace deal. You know, so without faith in God, fear is going to grip the world due to some global disaster. And they're going to flock to anyone that can provide a message of hope. They can calm the panic and stop the chaos. That will be the Antichrist at that point. And he's going to masterfully exploit all that fear to his advantage, and there will be no question about taking the mark of the beast if it means having safety, stability, necessities such as food, clothing, and shelter. So, you know, instead of providing salvation, you know, faith in the Antichrist is only going to ensure war, pestilence, and that the people fear, and that's what's going to get inflicted upon them. Now, I really, you know, Fred, back earlier in the year when you did that whole sermon on Psalm 91, I mean, that really stuck with me, and that's why I threw this in here on that, because, you know, God promised to protect believers if people would only have faith in him. You know, verses 3-13 on this, he himself will deliver you from the hunter's net and from the destructive plague. He will cover you with his feathers, and you will take refuge under his wings. His faithfulness will be a protective shield. You will not fear the terror of the night, the arrow that flies by day, the plague that stalks in the darkness, or the pestilence that ravages at noon. Though 1,000 fall at your feet, at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, the pestilence will not reach you. You'll only see it with your eyes and witness the punishment of the wicked, because you have made the Lord my refuge and the Most High your dwelling place. No harm will come to you. No plague will come near you, near your tent. For he will give his angels orders concerning you to protect you in all your ways. They will support you with their hands so that you'll not strike your foot against a stone. You'll tread on the lion and the cobra, and you'll trample the young lion and the serpent. So this promise of protection includes the birth pains prior to the rapture of the church, as well as the judgments during the tribulation period for those that come to know him after the rapture. And, you know, God can be also trusted to fulfill those promises, unlike the Antichrist. Genesis 28:15, I am with you and watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. In Numbers 23:19, God is not human that he should lie, not a human being that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? Joshua 21:45 also says, not one of all the Lord's good promises to Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. 1 Thessalonians 5:24 also says, the one who calls you is faithful and he will do it. Hebrews 10:23 said, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And that gets us through everything that I think encapsulates why this is the last generation, why we are ripe for this to occur.
And so next week, you're going to get a little more specific, right?
Yeah, next week, I start to look into specific clues within scripture that I think denote timeline, specific dates. Now, we can, like we say, we can't know the rapture, but there's other things that we can know.
Yeah, it's not like he's gonna say, well, the day, the hour, and this and that. No,
I'll get to about a year.
Yeah, but he's it'd be interesting to hear John's conclusions. Put a lot of time in. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, something you said tonight about Psalm 91, those that come to know the Lord after the rapture, that gives me some comfort, because friends and family that don't listen to you now, but know about that, if they come to know the Lord after the, if they're going to have to go through tribulation, at least they're going to be saved.
They'll be saved. They'll also be spared some of the tribulation. I mean, there are certain judgments that they are protected from, but there's going to be others that are more global.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have to endure them. Yeah. So,
well, in case in point, well, we need to understand too. I mean, we do that things could get pretty bad before the rapture. I mean, we're not going to be necessarily spared from some of the effects of, you know, moving toward a one world government, socialism, you know, and what that might cause. You know, people groups throughout since the time of Christ who have been under great persecution. So we need to understand that too. And that's why the Lord wants us to be strong and stand firm in our faith, because we don't know what's in store. Yeah. Right, John?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to have to, like you say, there's going to be a lot more ratcheting up, I think, before we get removed.
Well, but, and they were saying there'll be many who abandon the faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't really have faith if they abandon it.
Well, that's a good point. So, you know, you call me Lord, Lord, but I don't know you. You know, and that's going to, I think, there's going to be a pruning or a weeding out, so to speak, on those who really stand firmly in the faith and those who just really haven't had a strong heart conviction about, more of an intellectual expression, the religious thing to do, instead of really having a heartfelt devotion to Christ.
Yeah.
John, would you say that the whole COVID thing is sort of a, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like a dry run for people accepting the Antichrist? You see what I'm saying? Because people are just like the vaccine and some people's openness. And I'm not trying to get into a vaccine debate, but you know, a lot of people are just going along with whatever they're told. And it seems like that's kind of setting the stage.
Yeah, I was saying earlier that this is, you know, this is kind of grooming people, you know, wear your masks, you know, stay indoors, you know, self-quarantine. All these things are grooming people to just conform and do what you're told. You know, take the mark, you know.
But couldn't you argue that, because this isn't the first time in history that something like this has happened. I mean, you went back in the early 1900s, the Spanish flu that happened, and people had to do the same thing back then. I mean, this is nowhere near as severe as the Spanish flu, but could you say it's kind of like every century, it seems like at the beginning, there's always some sort of grand pandemic that disrupts things, and it's just kind of a new stage from new era, so to speak. So, I mean, it's... That's the one thing I was talking about with the COVID. I mean, it seems like it happens at the beginning of every century at some point in time.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a regularity on that every 100 years or not. I can't comment on that, but certain... Yeah, go ahead. No, go on.
I get your point. You do make a point. So you look at, let's say we'll take the Spanish flu, 1918, 17, the millions that died.
Yeah.
They're estimating 50 million. You know, right?
It could be 100 million.
Yeah, I mean, that is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And so, obviously, they didn't have a vaccine. They didn't have the things in place that we have in place today. But with us, it seems like this quote-unquote pandemic has been made to be such a monster when, in fact, it's not.
Right.
And so, it seems to just fit their agenda in global control, destroying the economy. Destroying people's livelihoods, putting fear in them. And even back then, if you read about the Spanish flu, they were saying, and they had masks and things like that. There was mass protest against that. They just refused to listen to the authorities, you know? But what was interesting with that, what was the main spreader of the Spanish flu?
Those were the veterans who came back who didn't have it was a foreign disease. They had no immunity to it.
Right, but they were the ones that were stuck in the
trenches.
The trenches, and also they were the ones who were stuck in the field hospitals,
the troop
ships. Wow. So they came back, and then they had this huge parade in New York City. Yeah, right. Pinkerton. Yeah, and that after that, it just took off.
Right.
And so it seems today it's more, they're making it much bigger than it is, even though there's been this global thing. And it just, to me, I believe it's testing the waters for global control and control of people, see what they can get away with, those kind of things. At least that's my take.
Right. It feels that way, yeah.
Could it be more so in the U.S.? Because it seems like a lot of other countries are responding to it a lot better than we have. I mean, was it Italy or someone now has a supposed cure for something like it, or a cure, some sort of treatment for it, but no. The U.S. doesn't want anything to do with that.
I mean, England is, UK is, I think as bad as we are on the lockdowns and things like that.
Yeah.
It's just weird, too. Things like hydroxychloroquine, very cheap, safe, and appears to be effective, yet the pharmaceutical companies don't want you to even talk about it because they want their high-priced... So I mean there's a lot of things like that are going on that just make you scratch your head,
right,
if you actually think about it.
We let all the lawlessness too, though, the Black Lives Matter and how defunding police, and it's like, I can't even wrap my brain around
and how that's embraced by the political class too.
And I, for instance, my niece, you know, quote, educated niece. I mean, she is educated and smart, but then she's so blind to so much stuff. And I see conversations with her friends on Facebook where they more or less back up, well, how else are Black people supposed to make their point? I mean, they're saying this is what they have to do to get their point across. You know, all this looting, and I'm thinking, this is going to come around and bite you so big, but it's going to bite all of us, and it is.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
I just, you know, being a Christian is hard sometimes because we see what we see, and but they're not seeing it.
But the thing is, I mean, we've been given insight that the world doesn't have, and that gives us more responsibility to live well for the Lord because of the insight we've been given. I mean, it just makes that very clear to us that we have tremendous responsibility to present the gospel and how we live, how we respond to these things. You know, and you can't get around it.
And the only prayer that's going to get you anywhere is salvation.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's going to make any difference.
Yep. Yeah.
Because you can argue points that are extended out from the Holy Spirit's teaching, and you're not going to get anywhere out here. You got to go back to the basics.
Yeah, faith comes by hearing, and hearing the word of God.
Well, if you found this interesting and useful.
Very good, John. Thank you.
Thank you, John. It's a depressing subject.
So are we going to frustrating one. So we're going to be like the Millerites next week after you give your conclusions. You know the Millerites?
I'm trying. I should know this.
Okay. Come on.
No.
Yeah.
A movie?
No.
A band?
No. During the 1800s, there were a followed man by the name of Miller, who said that the rapture was going to occur at a certain time, right? They sold everything. He gets the date. I mean, and we're talking hundreds of people. They sold everything. Everything. And they gave stuff away and everything and went up to the field and sat, and it didn't happen. And he goes, wait a minute.
Next year.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
And he did it to him the second time and left most of them destitute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just had to throw that.
Yeah.
Why bother selling everything if you're going to be out of here anyway?
No, not really.
Yeah, but then I think they gave it away and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.